Welcome to the I Made That podcast. This is season one. Even though there have been previous episodes of this podcast, I'm calling this season one because it's the first time I've actually felt organized around what I'm doing with the podcast, which is, for this season, a book club style podcast where we do a deep dive into Jess Connelly's new book, Breaking Free from Body Shame. Hi, everyone. We are back to record chapter 4 from Breaking Free from Body Shame. This chapter is entitled Your Body Does Not Belong to the World. I feel like frazzled because I've just been giving Alyssa a play-by-play of my life as I had to take a friend's car to be transported across the country. And it was just this whole thing. And so I was like, this is happening. Now this is happening. But I didn't need to change any plans at all because everything worked out. But we are here and excited to be talking today and going forward for this book. It's just going to be Alyssa Pike and I. Hannah's going to be focusing on some other things. But we are excited to be here with you guys. So let's go ahead and jump in, Alyssa. Anything you loved from this chapter or didn't love?
Yeah, I'm excited to be back again. Also, I just want to give a caveat that I'm getting over a cold. So probably no one can tell, but I feel like my voice sounds slightly different.
It sounds very talk showy. Like, I feel like we're good. It sounds
okay, good. I wrote down a couple things from this chapter. I really like this chapter. The first thing that kind of stuck out to me was she tells this story of basically having something spoken over her, and she wants to go and find someone who can help her make sense of it and can help her kind of turn the corner or just develop a new perspective around her body. And it just reminded me of how important it is to have people in your life who can speak truth, because she says at some point in this chapter, the world doesn't get to speak into naming our bodies. And I just thought that was really helpful. And it made me think about the people that for me kind of spoke that truth, which was interesting because I will say for me at the time, this was like maybe 5 years ago, a lot of the people that were speaking truth, ironically, were like not actually physically in the same location as me. Like, it was a lot of people that I was learning from online, which sounds kind of weird. Obviously, I'd prefer to have it in person, but it just kind of goes to show that we can learn from lots of different avenues, which I thought was really interesting.
Yeah, I loved that story she gave about her trainer. Like, if you haven't read the book, what happened was she was working out with her trainer, and then the trainer was talking about how she herself had gained weight or had gone through something that had led to her weighing more. And she looked at Jess and was like, Jess, I only weigh about 10 pounds less than you. And Jess, like, very boldly looked at her. And I love the phrase that she gave. She was like, my body is good. It is not a marker of badness. Please do not compare yourself to me in a way that's negative ever again. And I love that. I love that level of like standing up for yourself. And I thought that was just such a bold statement, but then something that can be very hard to do when someone says something bad about your body. Like, when I think about doctors saying critical things about your body, it can be hard to just let that roll off your back.
Yeah, for sure. I think that was a really great, not only truth that she was speaking over herself, but a boundary that she made really clear with this trainer of like, you cannot come and speak this, like, you're encroaching now on my body, and that's not appropriate, and that's not okay. And I think the way she said it was perfect, because it wasn't an attack, it was just really firm. And I think that is really kind of jarring, at least initially. When we redevelop this new perspective or this new truth about our bodies, I think it can be really scary to kind of articulate it to other people. And so I thought it reminded me also about another part in this chapter where she talks about the agreements that we make. And I feel like we've talked about this a little bit already in other episodes, but it just goes to show how important it is to pay attention to the agreements that you have. And she even talked about, so, you know, sometimes we agree with certain freedoms in our brain, but it's hard for it to transfer down into our bones or into our heart. And so how do we make that transfer, or how do we sit when we're in that spot and it's not fully resonating? So I was curious if you had any thoughts about that or just an experience like that.
Yeah, I think for me, because it can be, it kind of reminds me of like empty affirmations we can try to tell ourselves, like looking in the mirror and saying like, you know, you are beautiful, you are powerful. And it might feel like dumb and a waste of time to do those because they don't get into like your bones, like you're saying. And for me personally, like I've always loved writing. It's always been so helpful for me to make sense of mm-hmm. what's going on and help me think of like where I want to go. And I think a lot of it goes back to like a curiosity of like, in the beginning, it was like, okay, what if I didn't hate my body as much as I do? What could it look like to not think about my body and be preoccupied and just kind of daydream almost about what if that was a possibility? What would it look like? What things would I do for my body? And I think it's a really slow like process of being curious, but then also noticing like, you know, what you do with your body that feels good, like going to yoga feels good, you know, going and doing a kickboxing class feels bad, like just noticing what helps you feel well in your body and bringing in those things. But a lot of this is so messy. And I think just mm-hmm. writing for me, and that was why Eat That Blog was such a part of my life and so helpful for so long, just because it was like a place to be curious and to hold me accountable to being curious about like how to be kinder to myself. And so for me, that's always been helpful. I feel like these conversations are very what's the right word? Like, I guess they're, I can still be sensitive and I don't want to have them with just anyone. And I feel safer having these conversations with myself and sorting these things out for myself rather than having them with, you know, a friend who is not aware of health at every size, or especially a doctor who mm-hmm. is not aware of health at every size. And so for me, I think writing allows me to sort things out for myself before they have to be like on display for others. So that's kind of what came to my mind. What about you when you're thinking about getting things from like a superficial level down into your kind of essence?
Yeah. Well, I like what you said about curiosity, because I think there is something to be said about, you know, not just repeating these phrases over and over. Like, that can be helpful and there can be a place for that, but sometimes you're just not feeling it. You're just like, I said the thing, but it's not registering. And I think the curiosity is really great because it just gives yourself an opportunity to consider. It doesn't feel quite as much of a commitment, but it gives yourself an opportunity to just try some different things out and really work on responding to your body's needs. Because I think a big part of healing your relationship with your body in particular is learning, one, what your body is saying, what it's asking for, but also developing the trust that it's going to be telling you what it needs, and then being able to, from a place of curiosity and care, respond to those needs. And so what I'm kind of hearing you saying is, we don't just say the things, but we actually slowly over time implement some of these different changes. And then that kind of helps it register. At least that was really helpful for me. Like, there were a lot of times where I just did the thing that felt the most gentle and the most kind in a particular moment. And it didn't totally make sense, but over time, it really started to register. And I think that just goes back to your point of this being a messy process, and it's not something that we're just like, okay, here it is, I'm just going to adopt it right away. even though I kind of wish it was like that.
Yeah, because I feel like even still, like, my body image can feel fragile, like, as I go through different seasons. And it can be like this, initially this frustration of like, didn't I figure this all out already? And then this like whole new process of coming to terms with how your body is. And so I think it's tricky. And as you were talking, I was also thinking about like, somewhere in the chapter, Jess was talking about when she finds herself in diety conversations, how she'll like know and think, I no longer belong here. And just kind of that realization. And I really love that. Because I feel that a lot in conversations about, it doesn't really happen that often to me, because I think I'm pretty like open about what I do. And then so sometimes I think if a person, maybe this is horrible, but if a person knows they have issues with food and I work in eating disorders, they're like, I don't want her to find out this dysfunction. So they just like won't talk about food at all with me. So I don't feel like I'm in these conversations that often, but the most recent one I remember was Halloween, and another mom within the neighborhood was talking about candy and sugar and her kid eating it. And I was like, oh, I no longer belong here, which I know that, but I thought that phrase was really helpful. Just because that's what I'm thinking in those moments. Like, this is not a fulfilling, enjoyable conversation for me, and I'm not going to make any effort to keep it going because I think it's morally wrong.
Right.
And so I just kind of get real quiet or make some joke about something else and take a 180.
Yeah, that's that. I find myself there a lot too. It's funny, like, some of my friends, I made a couple of new friends over the last year, and every time I meet someone for the first time, I'm like kind of feeling out like, oh, what do you think about food? Like, how do you approach these things? And we've now come to this place where like they all know about Gratefully Nourished. And so every time we eat, they'll be like, oh guys, we're Gratefully Nourished right now. Like, and they'll be like, or occasionally they might say something that I'll just like look at them and I'm like, we don't talk about food like that. Come on. Like, you know this. And so it's been kind of a fun way for me to share this new perspective. And I think they've been pretty receptive to it, which has been really nice.
Yeah, that's awesome. It also reminds me of what you said in one of our lost episodes when my computer died. But Alyssa, you went through something you learned from Jessica Setnik's books on a new identity for eating disorders. And I remember you listed out like three things you need for eating disorder recovery. What were they?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I was like, please remember them right now. I do. They were a turning point, a reason to live, and a new identity. And yeah, so that's something that has stuck with me. I think my very first continuing education I ever did about eating disorders was Jessica Setnik's boot camp, and I thought it was fascinating. But that just really stuck out to me because it just speaks again to the progression of this process, but also just the real importance of having that new identity, because that's what this is all about. I mean, that's what a lot of kind of, well, I guess I'll say in my opinion, I think that's what a lot of kind of pathological or different challenges kind of stem from is the identity piece. But like, how do we get there and what does that look like it's kind of different for all of us.
Yeah. And I feel like identity is such a journey. I'm like, I could probably talk about identity in like every single therapy session, because like it constantly comes up. Like,
yeah,
it came up this week when I was in therapy. And it's just like, yeah, that's, I think for the rest of my life, just going to be something we're talking about. Maybe not the rest of my life. Like, I have hope that like Christ could change that in such a like life shattering and wonderful way that I feel so firm that my identity is in him. But I think just this week I was like, man, I need to read one of my favorite books on identity, is Identity Theft. And I was like, I need to start reading that. Is that what it's called? I think that's what it's called.
I think you've shared it. I feel like I've heard of that.
Yeah. But then I'm like, wait, Christy Harrison, that's the term she uses. I'm like, is that the right, maybe it's just whatever. I'll figure it out and put it in the show notes just to make sure if anyone wants to read it. It's so good. It's a compilation of like a lot of Christian authors who come together and wrote this book on identity, and it's fantastic.
I need to
read that. But I do feel like identity is a journey, and I never want to paint like, if you just do these things, or, you know, identity is just so easy to find. Like, these are still things I struggle with on a weekly basis.
Yeah, I just listened recently to a sermon by Tim Keller, and it was called Upside Down Living. It was on Spotify. And I feel like I'm new to the Tim Keller train, but he's fantastic. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is really, really good. Like, I just remember writing it down, and I was like, this is about identity. I don't remember it entirely what he's talking about, and I need to listen to it again. But I think you're right. It is something that just, it's going to be a lifelong process, because it is so core to our relationship with God. And I think if it were really easy, then we wouldn't need God as much. So I think that would make sense that we would come back to it. But I don't know. I'm thinking about that right now.
Yeah, just like this constant, like, I'm laying this down, I'm picking this up, you know, this constant sanctification process that's happening. Mm-hmm. That's tricky. So another thing from this chapter that I had mixed feelings on, it was just interesting hearing how like different things can help different people. And so Jess has shared her experience with the Revelation Wellness founder and creator, and how it was just so good, and like all the things, I think her name's Elisa, told Jess, just like constantly affirming that Jess's body is good, and just like such like sweet and special stories that they had together of just like building up Jess's body is good. And I have always had a really difficult time with Revelation Wellness. And I wonder it's because exercise for so long was something I just seriously misused. And so maybe if I never misuse exercise, I wouldn't feel this way. But because exercise was a way I abused myself, any like connection of like exercise and spirituality to me feels like a misuse of what is sacred, and it really feels icky to me, and I hate it. And so that whole part, I was just like, this has been so healing for her, and yet it's even hard for me to hear her talk about it, because I've done a couple of the Revelation Wellness retreats, and I've had to turn them off because I'm just like, it feels so icky to me, and it feels so bad. And so I wonder if anyone else has had that experience with it, but it just seems, I don't know. Icky is the best word to describe it for me. It's just not a good fit based on what I've been through.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I will say I am not really familiar with Revelation Wellness. I've like seen it floating around on Instagram from time to time, but never really looked into it. But I can definitely understand if you had a really complicated relationship with exercise, that it would possibly evoke feelings like that. And I think what you said of just how everything, like different things, can be helpful or not helpful for some people. And I think that is really the most important piece to recognize. Like, it's so interesting to me how two people could do the exact same thing and one could be really disordered and the other could be totally fine. And of course, there are some things that are just disordered, like no matter who does it. But when we're talking about like reestablishing a relationship with exercise, or like practicing gentle nutrition, like those things happen at such different phases for people. And so I think that's also part of my reason why every time I post something on Instagram, I'm like, okay, guys, big caveat here. Like, this might not be relevant for you. Like, it just depends on where you are in your recovery. And I think when I read Mere Christianity, which I talked about in previous episodes as well, I think one thing C.S. Lewis did really, really well is he always kind of included that caveat as well. Like, he was like, if this doesn't make sense for you, just drop it. Like, you might not be ready for it. And I'm like, what an underutilized tool for us to just be like, okay, this might not make sense for you. Like, and I think now I'm really going on a tangent. I think that this makes so much sense. And the reason why we have such a hard time with this is because we're so distracted, we're so busy, we don't want to be in touch with like what we actually need in a moment. We just want someone to be like, here you go, here's this plan, or here's this regimen, like just do it. But that's not life-giving, I don't think. Like, it really requires us to slow down and have that attunement and just have the ability to be like, what do I actually need in a particular moment? And if we have so many things hindering that, it's going to be really hard to do that. So I don't know, that was really long, but hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me think about like back to my days of sharing on Instagram, and just that experience you're talking about of sharing something and it not being right for people. And then them needing to say, this isn't right for me. Instead, like, you could just like practice the art of not having to get the last word. You could just identify like, oh, that's not good advice for me, I'm just going to leave that one. but instead it's hard. Like, I know it's hard because people are in such different phases. Like, you know, I've gone from having to be very firm in my belief that like exercise is really bad for me, I need to be really careful, to now, well, I guess it was this journey from that to then anytime I would move my body, I'd be plagued with this like confusion of like, is this good? Is this bad? What am I doing? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't even know. Like, can I even have a workout plan? To now where it's like, I can move pretty freely. And I'm not plagued by that question of like, is exercise bad? Now it's just like, no, exercise is good and it's enjoyable and I don't abuse it. There's no misuse of exercise in my life now. Mm-hmm. And it's still a topic that can come up like in my personal therapy sessions, but it has been these phases throughout life. And yeah, different people need different things depending on what they're going through.
Yeah, I went through a long phase of like really not exercising consistently, and it was part of like my healing my relationship with food and my body. And then I got to a place where I think I was actually more kind of miserable not exercising, if that makes sense. And then I had to like reclaim that for myself and just be like, okay, it can be a disordered thing, but inherently it's not. And so how do I use this as a way to enhance my health and my life? And it's kind of a constant process for me because it is kind of soothing to me. Like, if I'm stressed, and as far as like things go to soothe me, that one feels good sometimes, if that makes sense. But it is a process. And again, I think that's why this is so nuanced. But I do think it's important for people to know that exercise is not something inherently wrong, and diet culture in particular doesn't get to own it as such. And so can we find ways that are gentle and fun and make us feel good? And it might not look at all what we thought it was going to look like, but it's still something that can be good.
Yeah. It reminds me, Jess brought up in the chapter, like Galatians 5:1, and it says, do not be burdened by a yoke of slavery. And in my experience, like a huge yoke of slavery was exercise, that like pull and requirement to have to go and move my body. I would not be okay or feel okay if I didn't. It would lead to like crying and panic attacks if movement wasn't involved in my life. And that was horrible. And so like that obviously was like a relationship that needed to be changed with movement. But now like where I am at, where I counsel people to get to, is like, you know, doing something with their eating or doing something with their exercise does not feel like a burden. It does not feel like slavery. And so, yeah, just a different place now than I was then.
Yeah, I like that. So maybe for some people who are listening, do people like practical examples of how to move that doesn't feel too burdensome?
Yeah, I think that could be good. I have always found that helpful.
I think so. I will just say I don't think running very frequently, it doesn't feel amazing to me, which has been a whole saga, which maybe we can talk about another time. But like, I would say the most disordered behavior that for me, I guess, well, there's probably more. I'll save the triggering language. But one of the most disordered behaviors was running for me. Like, it was just something that I did way too much. I went way too long. I didn't do the proper rest and cross training and all this stuff. And my body has truly been paying for it for years. Like, I ran a marathon in 2015, and it was something that I can truly say I don't think I'll ever do again. Like, it's just very unnecessary. And I'm sorry if someone really likes it. I mean, if you do, that's great. But like, for me, it was just way too long, and it became a burden. And so anyway, long story short, I didn't run consistently for like 7 years. Like, it's now 2022. And my friends and I signed up for a half marathon, and it was such a cool experience for me to be like, I truly am just doing this so that I can do it with you guys, because we're going to go to Disney World.
Oh, and no way. That's going to be the princess one?
Yes. Yes.
That's fun.
It's going to be really fun, but like, I don't care at all about what the time is. I truly have not done a fantastic job sticking to the training schedule, but it's just gonna be a fun thing for us to do. And I'm just like, it's a whole different perspective. And so, but all that to say, I've still learned that once this half training is over, I do not think I will run more than like maybe once a week, if that. Like, it's just not my preference. I think I don't really love like super high intensity workouts. Like, I really like lifting weights or even just like doing a bar class. I just prefer it to be low intensity. So anyway, that's what I've learned about just this process and giving myself the space to be like, what does your body act like? What feels good to your body? And can you just respond in that way? Because it's not about what your body looks like. It's about making your body work well and feel energized and all of those things.
Yeah. I've had a couple clients train for half marathons, and how we typically end up talking about it is like, you know, the running is only going to be half of the training. Like, if you are going to do this, because for some people, like, running can be such a great thing. I might have said this before in an episode, but like, for people who have always felt like they're uncoordinated, that they're not an athlete, any kind of endurance event, it doesn't have to be running, but any kind of thing you can get a medal in, like, can be a very empowering experience if someone's always felt like clumsy. And so, but with these clients, how the conversation usually goes is like, okay, you're training for a half marathon. The running is only half of the training. Like, you have to like figure out, can you get massages? Can you fit that into your budget? Can you do ice baths, or can you do, you know, stretching routines? Like, run as little as you possibly can to be, you know, wise, but still, like, running should only be half of the training. And I feel like an unhealthy way to approach trainings is like to end up overusing your body. And, you know, anytime you end up injured is a red flag, clearly.
Yeah. And part of that whole taking care of yourself is eating more because you're training for this half marathon. Like, it's just a whole different experience. And I'm really grateful for it, because back in 2015, it was just different. And now it's like, this is not at all something I'm using to change my body. It's just a way to have fun, make a trip out of it. And running does feel nice, I think, when you aren't coming from a disordered place. Maybe not that frequently, which is what I'm learning, but it's, again, it's just all this process of, and approaching it with curiosity and compassion and responsiveness is just, I think, really helpful. And so, I think the practical thing, just to go back to that, would be to give yourself the space to be curious about what movements actually feel good, and also giving yourself the space to genuinely just quit if you're having a workout or you're doing something and it just feels bad. You know, like, there's no, we have to finish this workout that's making me miserable. Like, we don't have to do that anymore.
Yeah. And I'm about to do what I said I hated with talking about spirituality and exercise, but, you know, here we go. But something Jess said that I really liked was, and this is quoted from the book, "The more we learn about our kingdom rights through the power and capacity that raised Jesus Christ from the dead, the less we care about the expectations of the world." And I feel like that can apply to any expectations we have of how we have to move. Like, a workout has to involve, you know, putting on workout clothes and ending up sweaty. It's like, no, like, you can just go bike in your work clothes. You can do a 5-minute walk. You know, I do that all the time between client sessions, because I sit so much for my job. Like, sunshine is so good. It helps me feel better. And so having like a little 5-minute loop I can walk at my office or at my house can be so helpful, and just kind of redefining those expectations the world might put around movement.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And again, to quote this chapter, she says, she was talking about how she was learning how to move that's no longer from a place of shame. And I think that's kind of what we're talking about too. And just once you understand, or once you're beginning to practice and believe that your body is good, then we move our bodies as if they're good. And that looks, I think, a lot different than what we've maybe done in the past.
Yeah, it's hard for me to like fully articulate that. But yes, like, when you are moving your body because it is good, and because you want to take care of it, and you like it, and you think it deserves care, it's just so different from this place of like, oh, like I have this desperation I remember feeling to like have to change my body. It is such a shift, and this might be a good thing to end on, but in this chapter, just mentioned like Philippians 4:7, and it says, I carry the peace of God in my body. And she just goes on to say, you know, the spirit that rose Jesus Christ from the dead is alive in you. And I think I struggle a lot, and this is something I want to do more writing on. But just like when I'm done with childbearing years, like I really love and enjoy like the functionality of my body when I'm growing a baby, and then when I'm nursing a baby, it's just like, this is what I was made for. Like, this is just amazing and fascinating and incredible. And I think I'm going to struggle with like, what is this body good for if it's not making babies anymore? And really settling into this place of just body neutrality and maybe body disconnection a bit again. I'm not sure, but I think something that's going to be protective against this is Philippians 4:7. Like that reminder of like, inside this body, I carry the peace of God. The power that rose Jesus Christ from the dead is inside of me and alive in me. Like, I think that's going to continue to be such a place of healing for me. And as I think about my body and as I shift into different life stages, I just thought that was, I'm glad she brought that up.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I think that's a really honest question. I don't even know if I have anything to add to it. Like, what is, like, do I still believe this body is good if it's not functioning? Or in the case here, or the example you're giving, like, if it's not produce, like, rearing a child, which I know we're wrapping up soon, but just made me think of one other part where she talked about, like, you feel the freedom and you believe in the freedom in your body, but then you are experiencing pain, or you're experiencing maybe not the functionality that you had before or that you would like. And I think that's a really, really difficult place to be. And I don't know if I necessarily have a insightful thing to say about it, but I think that it's really important to make space for that because it's totally true. Like, we don't, our bodies don't always do and provide and function the way that we'd want them to, but they are still good.
It's hard, and I feel like this circles back to like identity questions for me, because like I can definitely fall into this like, you know, if I'm not doing and productive, and not even about exercise, but like things like
Yeah.
housework and work,
Same.
and then it's like then I'm worthless. Like, and I was at the park with my kids yesterday, like sitting at a picnic table, just like crying while they played on the slides, because, and I was journaling because I was just like, this is so hard to feel that feeling of like worthlessness if I can't do enough. And I think that'll continue to be just something I walk through, but I think it's good to talk about, because I just think this is such a common thing that everyone can struggle with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't have children yet, but I totally relate to feeling like, am I doing enough? Like, did I do enough work today?
Yeah.
But agree. I think that's the beauty of continually going back to God and just acknowledging, like, hey, there's actually, there's nothing that I can do without God. Like, there's nothing super wonderful about Alyssa, but because of what God has done for me, I'm now worthy of all of these things, and no one actually can take that from me. And so just like truly sitting in that and being silent before God is something that I want to do more. This year in particular.
Oh, I love these conversations. They're so good to have. So I'm grateful for you, Alyssa, and grateful for this time we get to spend together on a semi-regular basis.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, guys, that wraps up chapter 4. We hope you're still enjoying following along, and we will be back soon with chapter 5. Hope you're having a good week. Bye.